now tuned in to the Commissioner's Conversation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Commissioner Gordon.
Yes, sir. Welcome back. You are tuned in to the Commissioner's Conversation. I am your host, Commissioner Gordon. How's everybody feeling out here today?
Yes.
Yeah, we're doing pretty good on a Monday, man. Everything is going well on my end. And we are, again, we are live at Blends 2 Cigar Bar at 632 South Central Avenue in Hayville. We encourage anyone who's watching, who's listening, who's tuning in to come out and celebrate with us as we have a good time. We're talking sports, we're talking sneakers, we're talking the culture, the entire culture of everything that is surrounding sports. We're also saluting small, enterprising, young black entrepreneurs and encouraging all people to come out, shop with them. We're here to network and build up and encourage each other because that's what we do. We're a community. And the only way the community works if we all work together. So today, man, joining me is something that's near and dear to my heart, like I'm pretty sure it's near and dear to all of you, is I got my guy, Sneaker Fox, a.k.a. TK. I got my man, Big Mike from Can I Kick It? And we're going to talk about this, the culture of sneakers, of sports, and how it's like woven into our, like, I don't want to say heritage, but our recent heritage. Like, you look around now and sneakers are a part of everything. Like, people are wearing sneakers with suits. People are wearing sneakers with everything. Like, you got blaze, like a standard casual can be a blazer, pair of jeans or something, and then you wearing your Jordans. Yeah. So, I want you guys to introduce yourselves first, and then we can get into kind of like the culture, how everything transformed.
What's going on, y'all? Appreciate the introduction. My name is Sneaker Fox, TK. Got into sneakers, man. I've been into sneakers since a young kid. And when I decided to actually take it into and make it into like a business, I kind of looked at the scope of sneakers to decide what type of, everybody was wearing Jordans and Yeezys and all that. So I wanted to attach myself to a brand that was different so I could stand out. And then also a brand that was actually adapting and working with our culture and then actually doing stuff for our culture as well. So that's why I decided to go ahead and start working with Puma. And then I know you had asked me when I came in how that whole history started with Puma. In the case, those are Puma Clydes. Really, in that case, is the history of the Puma Clyde. We have, like, from the Clyde Lowe's, and then Puma relaunched in 2018. The orange one is when they relaunched. And then we got the one with my logo on there. One of my customizers designed that for me. And then this one right here is, like, the latest Clyde model that came out. So I liked pretty much I would always be at Greensbrier and the South DeKalb. They got a Puma lab there. Okay. And I was always in there shopping. And then one day I ran into one of the merchandisers for Puma. And he's like, man, I'm always seeing you whenever new releases come out. I'm always seeing you in here and you always buying Puma. Like, why is this? And I told him just pretty much my story. Like, hey, I wanted to get with a company that gets back to our culture and is trying to strive in our culture. So that's how I built that relationship. So now I also have a YouTube channel where I review sneakers, and now for the past 3 years they just send me free sneakers.
That's
and I
up.
Review them. So now I'm trying to take Puma and work with them and start to do events like this to get Puma out there more. So
what's the YouTube channel?
YouTube channel is Sneaker and a Watch. Sneaker and a Fox.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so definitely.
So just go into YouTube and just type Sneaker Fox or Sneaker Fox Sneaker Watch and I'll pop up.
So definitely. So this is how often do you do the YouTube?
I haven't been doing it as much recently, but usually at least I try to get a review up once every 2 weeks.
Okay.
Try to get a review. And then based on how many sneakers they send me as well. So when I get a certain amount they send me, then I'll go and knock out some reviews and everything.
Gotcha. And Big Mike, tell me a little bit about Can I Kick It, man?
Man, what's going on, y'all? I'm Big Mike with Can I Kick It. And we position ourselves as the culture's novelty shop. So we work with a lot of different brands, bringing their brands to different events and venues that they can't be at. You know, we work with a lot of small grassroots entrepreneurs to make sure that their brands can be taken across the world. The brand actually started with me, my uncle, and my cousin. He got out of the military and he came to us and he was like, you know, I want to do something family business wise. So, you know, what do y'all want to do? Me at that point, I grew up a sneakerhead, just like TK said. Most of us, I'm pretty sure, grew up around sneakers, wanting to buy them anyway. You know, so you had that instilled in you. So I threw out sneakers, and of course, my little cousin was like, "Yeah, sneakers, let's do that." So we actually started out going around the sneaker shows. Started out smaller, actually branched up and started working with the biggest one, SneakerCon. I'm pretty sure everybody knows they do a lot of shows here in Atlanta. And what we do is we travel across the country with them at their different events. We bring our own merchandise. We are a sustainable streetwear brand as well. So we do sell our own clothing as well, Can I Kick It clothing. And we bring other brands with us. So we have partners like Just Living. She has many sneakers that, you know, it's a 3-in-1 accessory. It can go from earrings to a necklace to a keychain. So we work with different things like that. We actually have a partner out in L.A. It goes by Troy Da Vinci. He actually did the Air Jordan coloring book, the first coloring book that involved sneakers. He had Air Jordan 1 through 23, introduced it to us as black people as a way to, you know, have therapy. A lot of us don't realize that coloring is a therapy, you know, and a way for us to actually, you know, release stress, release anger, different things like that. And it also teaches the young generation to be creatives, you know what I'm saying? So getting into that, you know, sneaker customizing culture like TK talked about with his sneaker over there. So that's pretty much how we started, and that's Can I Kick It. Like, we also have a sister brand called New Era Creators, and Can I Kick It and New Era Creators, we actually collaborate and do a lot of events as well. If a brand has an idea or a vision, we can bring that to life for them, regardless how big or small that is. We can do a lot with a little. So we work with events like Sneaker Ball Atlanta. We just did Red Bull Sound Clash. We're doing another Sneaker Ball in South Carolina this coming month. So do a lot of events like that as well. So,
just for both of you, how is it, how fulfilling is it, I'll ask, that you're doing something and that you're so passionate about? Because both of you, I can tell, like you said, you grew up with it. How does it even feel like you're doing actual work? Like when you're doing some of these activations, does it feel like you're doing work, or does it just feel like you out here having a great time?
Man, it's a lot of work. You know, I don't want people to get the conception that it's not a lot of work. Entrepreneurship is a lot of work, day in, day out. But like you said, it's fun. It's enjoyable. The events that we're doing, the things that we want to be a part of, being out here at, you know, Blends 2, being able to sit here, network, talk to our own people, you know, that's fun. That's lovely. You know what I'm saying? It's comfortable. It's not, I'm going to work, I got to clock in, I feel like I'm supposed to be doing something or trying to find something to do. I automatically know what to do. You know what I'm saying? So it's fulfilling for me. I enjoy it. I love to do it every day.
As for myself, I feel the same way as Mike. It doesn't feel like a job. A couple years ago, Puma sponsored an event for us. We did a Puma and Sonic the Hedgehog. I know y'all remember.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Right.
They did a collaboration sneaker, and I approached them. I was like, hey, since y'all doing a collaboration sneaker, let's do a Sonic competition, and the winner will give them the sneaker. So I found a company that has, they're called Games on Wheels. So they pulled up to GameStop. I was able to reach out to GameStop, and we worked together. And we had a bunch of kids, people from the industry brought their kids out, and we had a big competition where we had like five different screens that were all playing Sonic. And at the end, a 15-year-old boy won, and we were able to give him a free sneaker, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog.
Okay.
So doing stuff like that with the community, it definitely doesn't feel like work, man. It's fun.
So I'll ask this because I was thinking about this as we were talking about it and putting everything together, man. And you mentioned like the sneaker cons, the conventions, all of that. Has the idea or the term sneakerhead changed in like the past 5-10 years in your mind?
I would say yes, because I think now with the people that buy and resell sneakers, and reselling sneakers has become a billion-dollar business.
It certainly has.
So, and those are people who are considered sneakerheads.
You know right, what I'm right,
people
right.
who, like, buy it just to resell it. So I think that term sneakerhead has, you know, changed, you know.
For me, I'm going to definitely say yes to that. Like, I grew up in a culture of waiting in line for the shoes, not this online culture. You know what I'm saying? Like, for you to be able to sit there and use a sneaker bot, click a button, and it's running millions of different IDs for you to be able to get a shoe, you know, and you taking it out of the people's hands, like TK said, it's the resale culture, is they're becoming the sneakerheads. Like, being able to post a picture with 1,000 pair of that same shoe is becoming the sneakerhead culture. But, of course, like, we know you got the grassroots sneakerheads. You waited in line, or you had a connection at a store, or, you know, just things like that. But it's a lot of different ins and outs to the game now, sneaker-wise, that make you – I don't even like to associate with the sneakerhead term. I call myself a sneaker collector.
Okay.
But for a conversation, because people are going to sit there and understand better, like, I'll say, yeah, I'm a sneakerhead, because it's going to relate quicker than me saying I'm a collector, because they were like, okay, what you mean by you collect? Because I collect all different shoes. I don't just wear one brand. I don't wear, or, you know, two or three brands. I literally have some of every sneaker brand out there.
And it's funny that you say that, because I was thinking about it. I was like, man, listen, like you just said, I looked at a picture of a dude. It's one of the last Jordan releases. And it was a dude, like it was like he was Scrooge McDuck laying in the money, but he was laying all in the new releases. And I'm like, damn, this is why Nike's telling me no. You know what I'm saying? Like this. And I remember, like, growing up or coming up, I got family here and there, like in Chicago, Ohio, and like you would go to different places, and being a sneakerhead was like considered, you peeped something or incorporated something in your style that may not be where you from. You know what I'm saying? So if you go to Cincinnati, or you go out to the West Coast, or you go someplace and you say, damn, I ain't seen these before. And you pick them up, and you bring them home, and everybody's like, oh, snap. You know, because it was a lot of regional releases.
Exactly.
And now,
with the internet, it's not, the internet done brought everything together.
Right.
Like, you can't even tell where somebody's from anymore. Like, how they dress. Like, the internet has brought just everything together. Like, I remember you could go to the West Coast, New York, and look and be like, oh, you're not from here, just by how you dress, what you wearing. As far now with the internet, the made it where everybody looks the same. You know what I'm saying?
So yeah, with that, man, I want to say, like, just from going around, for you as individually, what was the shoe for you that was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm in love, like, this is it?
It's got to be the Nike Air Raid.
Okay, okay.
Remember the straps?
Yeah.
I mean, they came out in like 93. And I remember we used to call them the Malcolm X, because they actually came out around the same time as a Malcolm X movie, and had the X. And it was like, ever since that sneaker, I've been hooked, like, on sneakers. That was the very first one that I fell in love with.
I mean, this going to be very cliche, but for me, it was it's the Bread 11. So being a kid, like, we took a family trip and went to Disney. Everybody was down there. We happened to find a Jordan jersey. I found a black and red Jordan jersey down there. My folks bought it for me. And when we came back, they got me the Bread 11s to go with that. And I wore that to my, like, I wore that outfit everywhere. I wore it to my sisters. I remember specifically, I got a picture my auntie took. We were doing, I went to a performing arts school, so we did performances and different things at a high school in our area. So I got a picture standing outside with my sister. Performance, and I'm standing there in that outfit, and I look back on that all the time. I mean, of course, I got other shoes that I got before then. I got pictures in the Bordeaux 7s, you know, different thousands and thousands of different shoes, but that right there, I think, is what takes me back, and I'm actually able to think of what I really remember, and I'm like, okay, I remember specifically that moment, and I was like, that's what really kind of propelled me on into going to, like, I want every shoe.
Yeah, I can relate. For me, at that time, it was the Jordan 4s.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? I couldn't have been no more than 8-9 years old, but I remember looking at the 4s, looking like, dang, like, that's where this is going? Like, okay. And I think, and I'll bring it to you, because I was just doing a little history, man. It was like, was Michael Jordan and Nike the first, like, I don't want to say customized shoe, because before, like, you had, everybody was wearing Chucks. Like, you had the old school NBA, everybody was wearing Chucks. And I want to say, like, the late 70s, early 80s, Converse had I can't think, it was like the Attack or whatever the name of it was, but it had but it was supposed to be the Magic Johnson shoe. And it was supposed to be the Larry Bird shoe. But it was all the same Converse. It just had different damn colors. You know what I'm saying? Like, they would have the green and white, or it would have, like, the purple and gold. So, and I was trying to remember, I was like, I think Michael Jordan and the Jordan 1s may have been the first to stand out to where if another dude had a Nike shoe like a Bo Jackson, it didn't look exactly like the Jordans, and then that kind of changed the game.
A lot of people don't know, but the very first athlete to get a signature sneaker was actually Walt Clyde Frazier. And if a lot of people don't know, he played for the New York Knicks, but he's actually a local from Atlanta. And the Clyde sneaker was the very first sneaker in 1973 where an actual athlete got a signature sneaker. So before Jordan, before all that, it was a Clyde sneaker. And then the Clyde sneaker just really just took over the streets, you know, when it comes to hip-hop culture, the break dancers and everything. All the kids, just the way people with kids run into Jordans now, all the kids were doing that for the Clydes. Like, so Clyde Frazier, and that's why I did the display for the Clyde. We actually had this display at Sneaker Bar Atlanta back in, what was that, December?
Yeah, that was, November.
November, yeah, mm-hmm. So that's why I wanted to show, like, the history of the Clyde. So, like, this is, like, pretty much the very first Clyde that he dropped in, like, 1973 was this model style. And then they went on a hiatus for a little bit, and then they relaunched with Jay-Z in 2018 is when they relaunched. And that orange one, that's the Puma Clyde Disrupt. That was, like, the first sneaker back in 2018. And then the one in pink was the next one. And then, like I said, this was the one after that. But, yeah, Clyde Frazier was the very first athlete to get his own signature sneaker and open the doors to Jordan and then to the culture we have now, athletes getting signature sneakers.
And it's interesting that you say that it went on a hiatus, because typically, maybe I'm like most people, but when I think of Puma, the first shoe that comes to mind is the Clyde.
It's the Clyde, right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's interesting that they would take it off the shelves for a while, for any number of time, because I looked at that like Puma's Stan Smith, or,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying, or like Nike's Blazer or whatever, you know, like that's a staple shoe.
Yeah.
In their organization.
Right, right.
So for them to come back out and say, well, we'll take it off the shelf and then bring it back, I think it's something dope. And to give Clyde his just right. due, because they're still calling it the Clydes.
And you know what's dope is when Jay-Z took over, he actually gave Clyde a lifetime contract with Puma. You know, so Jay-Z giving back to us, to our culture, he gave him a lifetime contract. So now he's getting up the royalties on all these sneakers that sell. He's still able to eat, you know, so that's dope.
So, and you mentioned, like, in the 80s and late 70s, early 80s, like, whether it was the Clydes, whether it was any other shoe, like, when hip-hop was forming, it became like a part, that's when it really became like a part of your gear, like a part of your attire. You had the Clydes, or folks had on your shell toes, you know what I'm saying? You had the laces, or you didn't have laces, however you rocked it. And I think that may have been the beginning of where we are today, where
that's exactly right.
It's like essential, like, people ask you before, you ask you what kind of suit you're wearing, they ask you what kind of shoes you got on.
Right, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I think people look at that first. I think it's usually like the first thing they look, bottom up, and then go right up, you know, so.
And real quick, hand Big Ray the mic real quick. I want to ask you, because Ray, I'm not sure, where are you from, TK?
I'm from Atlanta.
You from Atlanta?
Yep.
Ray is from New York.
Okay.
And so, being from New York, like, around that time period, man, like, could you feel the change? I know you were a young man at that time, but could you feel the change in, like, the atmosphere of, before it was just, you just throwing some kicks, you run around outside, and now it's like, okay, hold on, wait a minute. I gotta have two pair of this, or I gotta have two pair of that.
Well, okay, I'm a way different person. Like, I was a break dancer, so that was part of the uniform for breakdancing.
Yep.
And then I also was a kid who my mom's always kept me fresh to death. You know what I'm saying? I had the Le Tigres with the Lee jeans. See, there was the culture back then commanded you to dress a certain way, being where you were from. Okay, I don't know how I was in Atlanta, but up in the Bronx, where the people are fresh, you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
It was Lee jeans with the patch still on it before they started snatching patches back in the days, okay? And it really depends on my foot devices. If I had the if I had the shell top Adidas, I was chilling.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? I wasn't, there was no breakdance battle. But if I knew that I was with my crew, the Uptown Rockers, I remember all that, okay? I always had fresh suede Pumas.
Suede.
Yeah, yeah.
Fresh suede Pumas. I used to go down to a place in the Bronx, and I never knew the name of it, but they called it Jumans.
Jumans.
Right. Because, and I don't want to offend nobody, but this is the way it was. Because let's say I was trying to get a bubble jacket that was $200.
Right.
You can talk them down to like $150. I got $50 in my pocket that my moms don't know about.
Right.
And then I would have the laces. The fat laces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my boy Ricky, my Puerto Rican homeboy, he knew how to do all styles. He could do the laces up the side and it wouldn't be in the middle. He could crisscross. He could take two different laces and make
them.
Man,
checkerboard.
Listen. Yeah. I used to walk to his house before school, PS16. With my laces in my hand and nothing in the shoe, like, yo, Rick, you got to hook me before we go to school. But it was the culture.
Yeah.
I've never, to this day, had a pair of Jordans.
Oh, wow.
Because, in all honesty, I didn't see the significance for me. You know, I understood, you know, Jordans were the joint, but, you know, I'm just, I was always an old soul. I wasn't prepared to pay that money for it, yo. You know what I'm saying? But then, once again, I went to Catholic school. And everybody wore shoes, not Ray.
Right.
Shell top Adidas. I had a medical excuse. It was a fake medical excuse.
Okay.
But I had a medical excuse. But once again, it was the culture. It was, and then after a while, the younger ones, who, as we got older, there was a time when sneakers were, I get, not becoming extinct, but we wasn't wearing them as much, because then we got into the Timberlands, the 40 Belows, the Gore-Tex.
Okay.
You know, if we wore sneakers, then we was, I guess, going to gym or going to play ball. But then, you know, you got cats that used to play ball in they Timbs.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's totally a New York thing.
Yeah.
But once again, it was the culture back then. And in a sense, as we started going from the 80s into the early 90s, times got rough. So if you was in sneakers, you wasn't geared up. You know what I'm saying? It was rough out there. Once again, cultural, you know.
And see, that's why I wanted you here, because you walked us into what I was trying to do. Because coming into the 90s,
made a good point. That was about
the
year.
Coming into the 90s, like here in Atlanta, sneakers were ramping up because you were seeing it more on television. You were seeing Dwayne Wayne or whoever on A Different World had all the J's. Will Smith on the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, he's wearing all the J's.
Oh, basketball.
Right, yeah. And then, like I said, just basketball players in general. Yeah, and so it, for us, it was becoming deeper rooted. And but I feel you on, I know a lot of people who've never had Jordans, just because, like how we talked about the sneakerheads before, like they feel like that's the hype beast, like that's the dude who's just chasing, like it's easy to go out and grab a pair of Jordans and style it.
But with me, and I was a sneakerhead, but I used to go for just the, like, I remember Lottos.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then there was a sneaker that not a lot of people got up on, but I had every flavor. They were called Diodoras.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Yo, I had every flavor. Every burgundy, blue, white.
Yeah.
Then Lottos, Diodoras. And the Lottos, you used to be able to take the sticker, take the Velcro off and put another Velcro up on that. Man, listen. But then me, I'm an Adidas person. I love Pumas, you know. And in all honesty, as you were saying, suits and sneakers, you know, once again, goes perfect. But remember, the culture, who was the first man that did that?
Russell Simmons.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, Russell Simmons was like, we was looking at this man like, he's dressed up in a tuxedo and got on Adidas.
Yeah.
What? You know, and I guess for me, as I get older, I'm all about comfortability. If I will be in a suit and a pair of Adidas in a hot second, you know, but that was the way it was. That was the culture.
Yep.
I agree with you on the comfort, though. Adidas, they do run the comfort world to me.
Yeah, but... Go ahead, Unit.
Y'all talking about sneakers. I'm from New York, too. Y'all can't forget about the track of Ewing, man.
Oh, yeah.
With the basketball on the side.
Yeah,
whooping, crying at night, man.
And the Ewans had a resurgence. Like,
yeah, they did.
They came
they
back.
A lot of collaborations.
They gave it up to a lot of entertainment.
Yeah, right. A lot of collaborations.
You know, look out for the Lost Boys. Coming out. We got the Lost Boy,
Ewan's
coming out.
Okay, definitely.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Mr. Cheeks on that. You know what I'm saying?
Shout out to Mr. Cheeks, DJ Unique. Yeah, check out that Lost Boy situation, man. Definitely. You said it's a collab with the Ewans?
Yeah, they got Capone Noriega.
Yeah.
RIP Big Pun.
EPMD did one.
A lot of, they giving like they giving endorsements to a lot of these hip hop artists.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Ewan's definitely putting it on the map. You know what I'm saying? Like he said, like. Being from New York, I'm from Queens, you know what I'm saying?
And from the Bronx.
See, huh?
We had to throw that Bronx on there. We're not doing this today.
No. We good.
Shan and KRS.
It's one.
Oh, no, we definitely not doing that.
See, that trend, you know what I'm saying? From New York. You know what I'm saying? When they came out with the Adidas suits, everybody wanted to sell to Adidas, man.
For sure.
So it is what it is.
Spread around the world, too.
And it's funny because, okay, you were saying that there's a collaboration going on with the Ewans, but now, fast forward to the day, if any artist is collabing, whether it's with Nike or whether it's Puma or Adidas, any of these artists or hip-hop stars, celebrities, as soon as they put their name on it or as soon as they touch it, the price shoot up beyond belief.
Exponential every time, but
collapse.
That's why they do it. It's the internet culture that we said has been added into it.
Yeah.
So you go get this viral artist, go get this viral person, entertainer in general, and they automatically able to go out. And it's, like I said, it's not necessarily the retail price of it. The retail price does go up, but it's still around, you know, like the same price of what a Christmas shoe would cost. So you used to the Christmas Jordan being more expensive. The, you know, collaborations might jump up like that, but like you said, everybody wants it because these people have their own little mini cultures that sit out here and thrive, and when that shoe hit the internet, everybody want it. Then you got all these outlets like Complex, like Nice Kicks, like, you know, Sneaker Freakers, all these, you know, different outlets that post about it to hype it up. So that's what makes that price go like that. So resale price, yeah, if you don't catch it initially, then the resale price gonna hit you over the head.
And like
when he says that, like I remember the days, like there were no Nice Kicks or media outlets to tell you when the sneaker was coming out. Like you wouldn't know until you walk in the store and you'd be like with your boys, and you'd be like, oh, those are out, and then you would grab them, or you got a good relationship with the people at the store and they would let you know, hey, so and so is supposed to drop. You know what I'm saying? So that internet has really changed the whole culture.
So, and with that, man, it's like Ray touched on it earlier when he was talking about Jordans in particular, but you saying, like he's saying you wouldn't want to pay that money. I don't mind paying the 225 or the two, you know, the 250 or whatever, but when it comes to the resale value,
yeah,
like
crazy.
And you look at some of these sites like a StockX or, you know, whatever, GOAT, you know, all these sites, and then you see a shoe that probably should be $200, technically should be about $50, $60, but when after all the markup, you see, you know, it should be about $250 retail. That now it's $1,200 or it's $700, and you're like, okay, I was willing to maybe go up to maybe three, but I ain't doing no damn $1,200, man. Y'all can get the hell out of here with that.
It's the limited numbers that they throw out there. So,
they do it on purpose.
You know what I'm saying? The less of a shoe that's made, the more the value of it. Or, like I said, in a situation like, look at Virgil Abloh just passing, you know, and he got that first official. Of course, we seen all the Louis Vuitton Air Force Ones back in the day with just the check, and people was doing, you know, mom and pop shop style. But to have that first collab, I was just looking, sitting in the car before walking in, and it's a pair of them just went for $50,000 for friends and family, because it's only like, what, 10 of the pairs that was made. So a pair of friends and family Louis Vuitton Air Force Ones collab went for $50,000.
And see, that's the other thing. Like, I made a statement a long time ago, and I still hold on to it to this day. Like, if the company doesn't make actual athletic apparel, I'm not rocking with it for no sneakers. Like, I can see everybody got these Gucci shoes, tennis shoes, or Balenciagas. These little things look like space boots, like you about to land on the
exactly.
moon. If they don't actually make sport apparel, you're not just gonna slap a $1,500 price tag on it and tell me it's the next hottest joint out.
But, yeah, but you gotta understand, you're a purist. You know what I'm saying? And that's how it is sometimes. That's like,
some people.
I'm a cigar purist. I won't do flavored cigars. I don't do flavored cigars. I'm not going to dip it in no cognac. Like, I'm a purist. But the younger generation are the ones that are not going with the mainstream type of companies that make sports apparel. They're
right.
going with the companies that are nobody's heard of, new on the scene, independent. He started in his basement and now he's got mad stuff. They're not going to Walters.
Right.
Shout out to Walters.
Shout out to
Big Walters, man.
Yes, sir.
I'm glad you brought
Walters him. Makes me feel like I'm back home.
What?
If my sneaker sample isn't shrink wrapped in plastic, not dealing with it. But, you know, it's really, once again, now it comes down to an age gap, you know. But this is why companies like Balenciaga, you know what I'm saying, are going crazy. The Yeezys.
Right.
Honestly, I won't do it. But this is why the numbers are so high, because the younger generation, i.e. your son, yep. my son, you know what I'm saying, are really setting the trend with this, you know?
Yeah, and that's the old man in me, to get off my lawn speech in terms of, like, my son and I always had a conversation of, like, it even in terms, like, you talked about how everybody is looking the same, and, like, the uniform now is, like, everybody's, you don't know where anybody's from. It's the same way in music. Like, we had this conversation all the time. Like, it was fighting words for somebody to tell you, oh, man, you sound like Big Daddy Kane.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Oh, you trying to sound like such and such. You're like, no, hell, I don't. I got my own damn style. And that... But today, for somebody to say you sound like someone, or your song sounds like a Future song, it's like, oh, you think it sounds like Future? Oh, well, it's about
and
to blow.
It's about to be turned.
Like that Panda song.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I thought that was Future. But the dude's from New York. Right. You know what I'm saying?
It was so funny that he came. Like, somebody had a video of Future being in the club when that song first dropped. And he took a pause, like, wait a damn minute.
I heard that Future thought it was him.
Like, I don't remember doing that.
Yeah, Future. Yeah. They said Future thought it was him. Like, and they thought he got leaked or something like
Future
that.
Future was
like,
in the club.
He,
and he stopped and he listened, like, what the hell? I ain't do this damn song. But you see, like, dude had one hit and that was it. I think he might have had maybe another song. But yeah, and that was it, man. But you see it all the time. The kids try to sound like Lil Baby. Lil Baby's hot. Everybody going to sound like Lil Baby.
No matter where they from.
Everybody trying to sound like NBA Youngboy. Everybody's trying to sound like that dude, like Dirk or whoever it is. You got that person, and then you just got the clones. It's like a million people standing behind
right,
them.
Right.
And that's kind of how I feel about the shoe game, because somebody sees a celebrity wearing some Jordan 3s, and all of a sudden, now you can't buy Jordan 3s because it's a run on them, because everybody has to have them, because such and such rapper or such and such celebrity has the Jordan 3s, or they photoed out with them on.
Yeah, you got to remember, these brands also do that on purpose. They do that limited amount to continue to build that hype, you know? Because, like, with Jordans and all that, they do a limited amount, you know, on purpose. Because they want that hype. They want it to resell for $500, $600, you know? That's how they keep the energy going. It's the limited amounts. That's where they let it go.
Yeah, I was looking at, I mean, like you was talking about the celebrities and the people, like, driving the culture. If you look at it, just kind of touching back on the talks about, like, the designer brands getting into footwear, like streetwear, shoes, sneakers, different things like that, like, they realize, like, okay, this culture, like, the money that's spent in this culture is – exponential, right. And they become culture vultures. And that's the thing, like you say, I kind of agree. I don't own anything designer. I won't wear anything designer if it's not something that I make or that's a brand that I kind of associate with or know these people, then I don't really purchase it because I don't like the fact of how they come into the culture that we create and we make move.
Yep.
And they take the style, they take it out because they got the money and they go give it to their culture and act like they started it or they created it or they made it. There's no originality to that.
And I was just, and to piggyback off of that, I was just looking at a post where somebody was talking about the young ladies, and I think, I can't remember her name. She's an Asian actress. But apparently she's made her bones acting like a black person. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's in all these movies. She act like she's black.
Oh, the one that was in Crazy Rich Asians that you're talking about?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I think that is, that might be the thing.
I can't think of her name. Like, I know who you're talking about.
It's like Awkwafina or something. Yeah, something super, yep. Like, that's something supposed to be super ghetto. But, you know what I'm saying? But she's Asian. And then everybody started, like, going in on her. And then a lot of people started coming into her defense. Was like, oh, she's from Queens. And then they named the neighborhood, like, the neighborhood she's from. They don't talk like this. Like, right. They don't act like this. But that's not it's just not the Asian community. It's also, there's a Caucasian community that does the same thing. Like, we just had the two white kids, the Island Boys or whatever they call themselves, look like Kodak Black.
Right.
And they making money. They making millions. I mean, even to a point, to me, Jake and Logan Paul, like, they're taking advantage of the industry. They're culture vultures. They're being black without being black. You know what I'm saying? If that makes any sense. Like, they're being black without being black. And it's become, like, the sneaker culture has also allowed others to do the same. Like, you can have that look. Like, I've gone to, you know, go into business offices and people wear, like I said, the Jordan 1s. The Jordan 1 has taken over as a casual shoe or a business casual shoe.
Yeah.
And people will wear it with whatever they have on. But it allows you, because it's not the most comfortable shoe in the world, but it allows you to kind of somewhat express yourself without being, like, all the way down with the culture.
Right.
Listen, I didn't know if you...
See, the whole culture vulture thing, and this is just purely my opinion, and I state this by saying this. I've been in the music and entertainment industry since 88. I've done been there. I've done seen it from third base to
Vanilla Ice.
The only way that is allowed because we as the people allow it.
Exactly.
You know, third base, white rappers. Oh, it's dope. They got flow. Let them go. You know, Doja Cat.
Right, right.
Oh, that debate, the bass is dope. Let it go. You know, even from to a point with political people. Remember the chick who was... passing for black, but she was white from the NAACP?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
We knew she was white. We knew that. Oh, but she's with the NAACP. So let it go. The problem is that it, and that's why I don't use the word culture vulture, because we allow it. Just like in the fashion industry, we allow it.
Right.
You know, you've got so many black apparel companies that has come out that has changed the whole blueprint of urban society. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Too much for a Tommy Hilfiger to come in, and just because you put some black models up on there, then, oh, it's okay. It's Tommy. You know, Tyson Beckford, he's wearing Tommy. He's good. What we have to do is that we have to, if we gonna let you in, we have to control. We have to be the ones as a culture to be the vultures on those who try to come in and take us. You know, okay, we gonna let you, but here's the parameters. You know, it's no different than back in the days when companies were still South Africa, you know, apartheid. So what are you gonna do about, are you going to you know, now that you've divested or whatever the word was, are you going to start donating to HBCUs now?
Right.
You know, that's what we have to do, especially nowadays. And we have the power to do it, too. Especially with digital marketing and everything, digital and social media and online and this, that, we have the power to do that.
And it's so interesting that you say that, because we were just having a discussion here about, like, black coaches being hired. And we had the same conversation last week where my solution is strike. But you can't get the black players, well, I won't say black players, you can't get the players to unify long enough so that they can hurt the owner's pocket, and the owner, and they express to the owners of the teams and to the nation that we really want these African American coaches to coach our African American players. And so you run into the fact that, oh, the NFL knows that whatever beef you have, whatever gripe you have, it's not going to last long, because when it's 2 days before check day, you're going to shut the hell up.
And those checks are big. No, seriously, them checks are big, yo. And now that comes down to an economic thing.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Me and you can strike if we played for, East Cobb Middle School. You know what I'm saying? But the Giants? The Falcons? Do you know what I had to go through to get to this? To get my parents out of the hood, to make sure my sister ain't got to dance on no pole no more? Do you understand? I put my family on my back, and you want me to strike? For what? For a black coach to come coach me whose record ain't been proven? You get what I'm saying?
Right.
I think the bigger problem to me is, like, we looking for too much representation in something that ain't ours. Like, when are we going to go start up our own league? You know what I'm saying? That's the bigger issue here when we talk.
I will,
you know,
say, shouts out to the Georgia Warriors, my guy Chuck Barlow. I just put up a post. The MFL is a minor football league that's starting up. I think it started coming out of South Africa, where they were doing American football, and now it's starting to try to spread a little bit over into the United States. Like I said, the Georgia Warriors is one of the teams here that we were starting up, and I'm a part of, and my son Reese is a part of, and we're just getting it going. But it's in the, you know, it's in the fledgling stages of development, as opposed to, like, you get a guy like Vince McMahon, who's already a billionaire, and he can just throw $1 billion at something and say, hey, we're going to do the XFL again next year.
Right.
Run it. You know what I'm saying? We don't have that kind of bread.
And
so
then all of us run to it because it's a paycheck. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's like sometimes we got to realize, like, there's joy in the struggle, too, because we can start low and build high. You know what I'm saying? Everybody want to skip the hustle, the grind part of everything, and jump straight to the top, and that ain't always the case. If we able to support each other in a league like y'all start up the MFL, then you know, bring more people in, we can give some of our time to that and grow this. Let's grow our own thing. Let's not keep running to the NFL because they got, like I said, it's ours, but it's theirs. Because who are the majority of the athletes on the field? Us. We just making them more and more money. We keeping a dollar in their pocket.
And like TK said, man, it's one of the things where, like, they know you're going to be there. Like, we have these releases, whether it's shoes, you have these releases, and they only release like a couple thousand, and you have a couple million people trying to get the damn shoe, where nobody's getting pissed off enough to say, man, the hell with Nike. I ain't doing that shit no more.
People get pissed off, but then the next week,
you come right back.
They right.
You run right back. Yeah,
people. I got a quick question.
You got your mic up?
Can you hear me?
There you go.
It's a great idea because like 80, almost 90% of the players in the NFL are black, right? And just like you made a great point when you said, I took my mama out the hood, my sister ain't on the pole no more. You know what I mean? I got the whole family on my back. So my whole thing is we got to come up with solutions. You feel me? So what would be a solution? How would you be able to get these players to buy in? You get what I mean? Because when you, like you just said, the paychecks are huge. You're making $100,000 a week. You get what I'm like, hold on, I'm not going to put $100,000 on a week. You know, I made a week on hold. You know what I mean? And I think that is where we have our disconnect, because we put so much value on a paper dollar instead of your integrity.
Exactly.
But I also think, like I was telling you, I think it comes down to the consumers. like us, if we all got together, like, hey, we're not going to no more games, not spend no money on games, and we're not watching it on TV, changes will be made.
Right.
Like, if the owners, like, that's what it really comes down to. Like,
we tried that already with Kaepernick.
Right.
Yeah. There was some, I'm not watching football for the whole season. You know, I'm not watching. I'm not buying no more. And I'm not. And then when the seasons. Exactly. We did.
We did.
We said.
And I can tell you this from conversations with a lot of people in the industry that I worked in previously. Just it was more of them that continued to not watch after everything transpired with Kaepernick because they were mad at how the NFL handled it and didn't nip it in the bud quicker. It was more of them that are still not watching the NFL to this day because of that situation than it is us. We back watching it.
Right.
They still not watching.
Right.
See? We don't stick.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the challenge was is that there wasn't a replacement for what we were doing, right?
Right.
So if you're no longer watching the NFL, then what are you doing with that time? Like, how are you replacing Sundays? Mm-hmm. You know? So I think that the solution is, obviously, we need to own it. And things like, you know, the MFL and other leagues that have come up, you know, that it's going to be a grassroots thing where they continue to grow. But like you said, the people got to support it. And we got to make a conscious decision as consumers, how are we going to spend our time?
Right.
And if we're not going to spend it in the NFL, there needs to be a valuable replacement for us to spend that time. And if we don't have that, then we're going to keep running back to that field.
Well, I think the problem comes in with that is, as probably a lot of people in here probably knows, is that nobody believes you until it's done. Like, I had a little post up on my thing. Dude said, nobody's going to support you. Nobody's going to believe you. Nobody's going to stand behind you until they can see it. It's done. And then they'll support you. Like you with the whiskey, I'm sure you told hundreds of people before. So you finally got with somebody who like, man, I'm going to put some money with you. You know what I'm saying? Everybody else just probably like, yeah, okay, go for it. You know, pat you on the back and just keep you on your way. Same with cigars and shoes and all everything else. Nobody's going to believe you until you lay it out in front of them and say, this is what I have, this is what I've done. And then you have those people that'll jump on board. But the hard part is going to be for like a minor football league or another league that's going to start up, whether it's the USFL, is they're going to have to see it. And they're going to have to see it before they can believe it. It's going to have to be something, a completed project. Because nobody, if you tell somebody today, we'll start up a football league, you won't get anywhere. Until you can actually show something on paper or show something and say, oh, this is what we have. We don't have the Benz, but we over here at Grady Stadium. We don't have, you know, Charlotte, but we over here, you know what I'm saying, in such and such part. And then you see it, then people will start to kind of walk with you a little bit. They'll still be a little skeptical just in case a misstep goes along. But it has to be done and completed already.
And I will say this. I think Ice Cube gave us the business model with the big three.
With the big three, yeah.
Right? He shows you if you build it, they will come. And he did it in a grassroots type of way, lower ticket prices in a community traveling. Like, we can do the same thing in a version of the NFL, right, and various different sports. It may be a little bit different, but the concept is there. And I think he provided proof of concept. We just take the execution. Now, most people don't have the resources that Ice Cube have.
Right.
Like, let's be realistic.
That's
here, right?
I was about to go.
You know? But, like, we're stronger together. So you may not – they're just not one Ice Cube, but, I mean, if you got, you know, enough people together, we make him be a fraction of Ice Cube possible.
But where's the Ice Cube from the NFL? You got all of these legendary people. You know what I'm saying? That's where I kind of come in at, and it kind of irritates me because it's you got all these legends that done played in the NFL. Why haven't they come together and, you know, put some or endorsed a league like the MFL? That's all it takes is a small endorsement, like you said, and it don't have to be that, oh, it's at the finish point. Nah, because this person endorsed it, then, like you said, us as consumers, when we see that familiar face, then we go to it. And that's kind of the bigger thing or the bigger picture for me that I see is, like, the same people that are in these NBAs, NFLs, NHLs, MLBs, they can pull out. They've made enough money in 2-3 years contractual-wise to go and put into something together collectively. Like you said, we're stronger together and the league is started. That's it. Or you're endorsed with the NFL,
right.
And that's it. And that's what we really got to get to. And, you know, they work more on the partnerships with these bigger brands, and basically you're just taking yourself farther and farther out, because you got a lot of smaller brands, black-owned sneaker brands, that you can come get a shoe deal with or make your own shoe with, and people will start buying that because it's you. I think we don't value the fact that we are the business, or we are the name, or we are the face and reason that people are attracted to mm-hmm. something, and we think it's because that NFL label is there. That ain't it.
Right. Yeah. And I think also the NFL has been carefully constructed to where the players are not on top. Like, NBA is kind of constructed a little bit differently, but the Major League Baseball is, you know, guaranteed contracts. NBA is guaranteed contracts. Not sure about the NHL. But it's kind of a sport to where they don't want to give you that big check and give it to you guaranteed, because now if you run into, take a big hit and you feel a little funny Monday morning, you can't just say, hey, man, I don't feel too good. I can't come to work today, because you might get cut tomorrow if you don't go to work today.
Right.
And then you asked out pretty much, because there's nothing guaranteed in your contract. It might be a couple clauses here or there. It might be a certain percentage that you may be able to get. That's why a lot of times you hear, he signed for $65 million, 20 guaranteed.
Well, most of it is driven on playing time and all that stuff.
Right.
Yeah. And then the incentives or the bonuses that you get for doing certain things, like the AB situation. But my thing is, like I said, if we're in our own league, then we don't have to sit there and fight or be mad or walk off a field like AB did, because he couldn't and get that, what was it, $333,000 that he was about to get. You wouldn't have to worry about that, because you're paying yourself, or you're getting paid from your people. So you wouldn't have that problem.
So once again, just to transition, we are live right here at Blends 2 Cigar Bar. I got my guy Big Ray from Radio 1 with me. I got Jay Reeske. He got his own cigars. The Garlitos is popping, man. Hey, salute. I got Sneaker Fox. I got KG from Greenwood Whiskey. And I got Can I Kick It? Big Mike from Can I Kick It? We are going to take a few minutes break. We got DJ Unique going to bring us back with the sounds of the culture that we were just talking about. The same sounds that we were just looking forward to and jamming to before we got on. We'll be back in just a second.
Okay, bye.